Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, focused on applying Mazda's customer-centric approach for vehicle design to car buying and servicing in order to create an experience centered around the customer. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. On Thursday, early voting begins for Charlotte's municipal elections. On the ballot, the race for mayor and those for Charlotte City Council and Mecklenburg County Commission, But perhaps the most important thing voters will make a decision about is the referendum for a sales tax increase for transit. Most important because the decision voters make, yes or no, will have long-term implications. The text on the ballot will ask you if you are for or against, quote, 1% local sales use taxes, in addition to the current local sales and use taxes, to be used only for roadway systems and public transportation systems. If you say yes, sales taxes on some items will increase from 7.25% to 8.25%. That is estimated to generate $19.4 billion over 30 years and be spent for various transit and transportation projects. If you say no, our city's transit plans will come to a screeching halt because there is no plan B. Proponents point to this as a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to curtail congestion and provide more options for getting around this growing city. Opponents say the burden of this tax will fall squarely on the shoulders of those who can least afford it. So how should you vote? Well, we can't tell you that, but we can bring you the arguments from both sides so you can make an intelligent decision, and that is what we'll try to do this hour. WFAE Steve Harrison has been following transportation and this transit plan for years. He joins us along with David Howard, a volunteer for the Yes for MEC campaign, an organization promoting the referendum. Mr. Howard is a former member of Charlotte City Council and former Chief Deputy Secretary of NCDOT. And Susan Rodriguez McDowell is a Mecklenburg County Commissioner, representing District 6 and chair of that body's Economic Development Committee. She is voting no and will tell us why you should too. Thank you all for being here. Welcome to the program.
Thank you.
Good morning.
Steve, I'm going to start with you for some nuts and bolts. First, am I right that if this referendum is defeated, there is no plan B?
I mean, I think that's correct that there is no plan B at the moment. I mean, I think the city could certainly try and come up with a different idea or a different strategy. However, there is nothing at the moment.
Okay. So remind us how cause this has been going on for a long time. So remind us how long city leaders have been working on this plan or the plan they originally took to the legislature and this plan, which is the one that came back from the legislature.
Yeah, I remember back in 2017, 2018, Katz had this idea of, I remember at the time they called it a big bang. They wanted to finish all of the rail projects that they had planned kind of at the same time. And they started talking about a 1 cent sales tax increase to do that. Then COVID came, things stalled. And then for several years after that, the city's plan at the time basically called for, we don't know the exact number, but probably 80 to 90% of sales tax money to go for rail transit. And that was the kind of working model the city had for a long time. But Republican leaders in Raleigh weren't interested. They felt that was too much money for trains. They wanted more investment in roads. And so then in 2024, there was a breakthrough where the managers of the Mecklenburg municipalities and the Mecklenburg County manager got together and came up with this compromise plan. 40% of the sales tax money would go to roads, no more than 40% for rail transit, and then 20% for things like buses. And so that is the model and the framework that we have today, and that's what we're going to be voting on next week.
And to take us way back, this is not even the original plan. The original plan called for 5 transit corridors with rail connecting uptown to Matthews, Pineville, Mooresville, and other places as well. And it was designed, we were told at the time, to reduce car dependency and support long-term growth. That plan morphed into the one we're ultimately voting on. Does the one we're ultimately voting on allegedly do what the original plan was supposed to do, reduce car dependency and support long-term growth?
The original plan, so the sales we have right today, we have a half-cent sales tax for transit that was passed by voters in 1998 and then approved again. There was a repeal effort in 2007 that voters rejected. And Mike, like you said, the idea at the time was that tax would build two segments of the blue line. It would build the red line. It would build bus rapid transit to Matthews. It would build a streetcar to the airport through Center City, all these things. And so only a small part of that actually happened. And then so this plan, in a way, is kind of a sequel. I mean, it's not picking up exactly where the old one left off. There are some changes to it, but it is an effort to kind of finish what was started 25 years ago.
So if voters say yes, not everything will start the day after we say yes. This money will flow into various pieces of a plan over 30 years, approximately $19.4 billion with a B, billion dollars over 30 years. And the sales tax on most items will increase by 1% from 7.25 to 8.25%. They say the average household would spend an extra $20 a month or $240 a year. And the city of Charlotte estimates that lower income families would spend $11 more per month because of the sales tax increase, or about $132 more every year. We would not pay this extra tax on gasoline or medicine or on most food. So take us through this plan, what this plan will provide if the referendum is approved by voters. What do we get?
Well, I think that the biggest thing that people would see right away, the kind of easiest thing to get started, would be this money, the 20% of the money set aside for buses. That's a pretty easy ramp up period. I mean, you can buy new buses and hire new drivers. And the plan is to have 15 bus routes have service every 15 minutes. All the other routes would have a bus come at least every 30 minutes. They would expand this idea called micro transit, which is CATS's attempt essentially to compete with Uber and have door-to-door service. That, I think, would happen pretty quickly. I mean, I think you would see some changes and improvements in the first year or two. In terms of the train piece, the law that was passed, the PAVE Act, mandates that the red line go first and that 50% of the red line has to be built before any other rail project can get started. Now, I will say the key piece on the rail transit is that CATS is banking on receiving about $6 billion in federal grants to make all of this work. But you know, the grants are competitive. They're not guaranteed. It's not that, you know, we apply and we automatically get the money. And so that will be a critical moment in this plan in 2 or 3 or 4 years in terms of how much money the red line gets, if it gets any money at all, because that will impact the entire rest of the schedule.
The red line is the line, the commuter trail, a train from uptown up through Davidson and in toward Moores Hill. That is not scheduled to open till 2035. That's 10 years from now. What's the plan in terms of getting it to 50% if everything else rests on getting it to 50%?
So that means that, right, like you said, 2035, that means that you're not going to see a lot of other movement on train lines until, I think it's, yeah, construction is 50%. I'm not sure exactly how they define that, but I think probably in 3 or 4 years, it would be the New Transit Authority, would go to the federal government with their application for a capital investment grant for the red line, and then we would see, you know, how much money we get. And one of the key things to watch is the red line is a commuter train. It's designed to bring people to and from uptown, mostly during rush hours. The Federal Transit Administration has been moving away from funding commuter rail since COVID, just because so many more people are working from home. There have been fewer of these commuter trains that have received funding. So, again, that would be a critical thing to watch in terms of, do the numbers work out for the red line?
And what do we know about the Trump administration? Because a lot of this depends on the federal government. The Biden administration was probably the most train-friendly administration in recent history, because Biden took the train everywhere when he was in the Senate and has an affinity for trains. I'm not sure how Donald Trump feels about this. At one point, Tariq Bakari, former city councilman, was in the command structure at the Department of Transportation. He's no longer there. What do we know about how they feel about all of this?
Yeah, the FTA under President Trump, I do not think has put out its detailed rules or guidance on the things they're going to be looking for when they award federal money. They have said at kind of the top level that safety is going to be an incredibly important metric that they're going to look at. And this happened months before the murder of Irina Zarudzka on the Lynx Blue Line here in Charlotte. So this was something that really from day one in the Trump administration, they were very focused on this idea of transit systems have to invest in safety. And of course, that's still an issue that's hanging over CATS with multiple investigations from the federal government as to, you know, how much they've spent on security and has it been effective.
So I want to bring in David Howard, volunteer for Yes for MEC, and Susan Rodriguez McDowell from District 6 in the Mecklenburg County Commission. He's in favor. She's against. Tell us why, David, we should vote yes.
First of all, Mike, thank you for having us on. You kind of led with it, which is the fact that this region is growing exponentially. You hear this number being thrown around all the time that 157 people are moving here every day. If you do the math, that is about 53,000 people every year. I don't know if you know what that feels like, but it's the size of the town of Mooresville moving to Charlotte every year. Just think about adding another town every year. We have to get in front of the growth. To your point earlier also, this five-corridor plan has been kind of the guiding rule, if you will. It wasn't just about moving people. It was about organizing growth, which you alluded to. We got to get in front of this growth. If we don't, we know what that feels like. It's congestion. It is sitting in traffic. It's I-77 all day long.
So before they take it away from us to raise money, I have to ask Susan Rodriguez McDowell, why should we say no?
Well, if I just build upon what Mr. Howard was saying, you know, if 157 people are moving to the region every day, then it sounds to me like the prioritization of mass transit is more important than ever. And this idea that we're just sort of, you know, relegating it because the General Assembly doesn't like mass transit, to me means this isn't the right plan for us. And so in my view, we're sort of throwing away exactly what we need for what ails us. By only doing 40% towards mass transit and 40% goes towards roads, which was never our priority. That was never what the plan was supposed to be about.
We're taking a deep dive into the transit plan that you'll be asked to vote, the referendum for transit you'll be asked to vote on beginning on Thursday with early voting beginning this morning on Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Let me let you expand on that, because after years of working on this plan and months of working to convince the Republican-controlled legislature to allow us to put a referendum on the ballot, they had to say yes to that, or we couldn't have put it on the ballot so that voters could decide whether or not this plan should move forward. Susan, you were the sole no vote on the county commission. At the time you said, quote, we have to say no now before we end up paying a tax in perpetuity that does not solve our transportation issues and merely buy some very expensive Band-Aids. Expand on that.
Well, you know, I love bike lanes. You know, I love sidewalks, widening sidewalks, like the things that they're mentioning as what they're going to be doing with the road money. You know, I think those are good things. I think those, you could also say they're Band-Aids. I mean, for my district, we are not going to have connected bike lanes that are going to come from South Charlotte and from Matthews, Mint Hill, Pineville, Ballantyne area, where you're going to be able to ride a bike connected all the way downtown. That's never going to happen. So, you know, I just have to also say that for me, Okay, I have to wrap up. Okay,
gotcha. Yeah, you do. Let me stop you there because we have to take a break. We'll come back with more in a moment with Susan Rodriguez McDowell, David Howard, and Steve Harrison on WFAE's Charlotte Talks.
Support comes from WFAE listeners and Habitat Charlotte Region. Since 1983, Habitat Charlotte Region has partnered with more than 5,000 families through financial education, homeownership, and critical home repair. More information at HabitatCharlotteRegion.org.
It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about something that was years in the making, is now going to be on the ballot beginning on Thursday when early voting begins, and that is the 1% sales tax referendum for transit. You'll be asked to vote yes or no. Here to talk about why you should vote yes, David Howard, a volunteer for the Yes for MEC campaign, also a former member of City Council and former deputy chief of NCDOT. Asking you to vote no, Susan Rodriguez McDowell, District 6 representative on the Mecklenburg County Commission. And Steve Harrison is with us. He's our WFAE news reporter who's covered transit for years for us on WFAE. David, this current plan that will be funded by the referendum is a mere shadow of the former plan, the original plan, as we have said. Does this current plan, in your mind, accomplish the same things? Will it reduce dependency on cars? Will it improve regional connectivity? Will it support long-term growth?
Sure. I want to answer your question, but I'd love to go back to the state conversation you were having with the commissioner as well. I think it's still kind of the same plan, Mike. It's still guidance. We're still working on the five corridors. The things that may have been beefed up since that original plan back in the 90s would be a larger focus on buses. And we're talking about these new technologies that have emerged over the last 25 years, like microtransit. But I think it's kind of the same plan. I mean, Steve mentioned earlier, it was supposed to be a streetcar out to the airport, and now it's light rail. Some of the technology has changed, but the five corridors, we've not gone away from almost at all. The only thing I'll go back when you asked the commissioner about the state is, you know, when I was chief deputy secretary, I was over all of the other modes of transportation, including public transportation. And I can tell you that this General Assembly has always asked for balance. That's what they asked of us at NCDOT. And I think that's what they're asking of Charlotte right now with this plan. I mean, you know, can you get around with just rail and buses? No, you're still going to have people that want to get around in cars. And I disagree with you, Commissioner. If you've been to Europe, you know that if you have a well-built out bike system, you can go anywhere you want to. I don't know if you've ever been to Amsterdam, but they ride bikes everywhere. So, I mean, you know, this is about mobility and bringing opportunity for people to have access to jobs and other things throughout the whole county, Mike.
So, Susan, I think it's still the original plan. Susan, 157 people, as David mentioned, move here every day, allegedly, and they bring with them cars, and they use those cars, and we are already talking about congested roads. Is that why you say this plan does not do what it should do, because it's 40% of the money is going to roads, 40% is going to rail, and 20% is going to buses? Well, cars and buses use the roads.
Right. Well, and, you know, it's not really about, I feel like there's a little bit of, you know, smoke and mirrors here when we talk about roads. Like, they're not going to add roads, which I'm actually glad they're not adding roads. I don't believe that we should add more lanes, more roads, because the more roads and lanes we have, the more they'll clog up with more cars. So we have to transition to a different kind of transportation. And so that's what I think, you know, we really need to do. But what I think that this campaign and, you know, these talking points are saying, they're sort of appealing to people's desires in Charlotte, but that everyone feels we're spending too much time sitting in our cars in traffic, right? And so this sort of says, hey, we're going to cure that with this 1% sales tax increase. And I just don't buy it. I don't buy that it's going to do that. I think that's what everyone wants to hear, but I don't think that this is the remedy to that.
Susan, proponents of this plan, and I'm going to paraphrase here because I don't remember exactly what was said, to not let the absence of perfection become the enemy of progress. In other words, this may not be everything we wished for, but it's something. And if we do nothing, we may not have another shot at this for decades. What are your thoughts on that, Susan?
Yeah, I think I kind of think that's BS. I mean, just to whenever someone says this is it, you know, Austin had three times trying to get a 1 cent sales tax increase before it finally happened. And that's because people weren't sold on it, because the plan wasn't right, because people will buy in if they think it's a good plan. And in my view, this is not a good plan. And I think people know it's the better than nothing plan. And so whoever wants to vote for a better than nothing plan, it doesn't have a very big vision. In my view, I think we need to get back to the table I don't think we can say, well, if this fails, that's it. It's over. No, you get back to the table and you keep on working.
So, David, this is not the plan that we intended, that we asked originally for. It was because Phil Berger came here, the Senate leader came here and said that our plan was too focused on trains and not enough on roads, which is what people use. So tell me why this plan that we've adjusted to please Raleigh is the right plan for Charlotte.
Well, again, I'm going to say that we adjusted it to fit inside of the state and the reality that we live in. We live in North Carolina, and we have to get the General Assembly support. But we're focusing way too much, I think, on just the tracks and the buses and the cars. What about the people? I mean, what we know is that more than 61% of the people that actually ride the bus right now don't have a license. We know that 40% of the people that ride the bus or rail don't have a license. This is about making sure that we can give people access. And the faster we can do that, the better. I mean, I don't know if you've done the math, but I kind of did it last night with AI. You know, having a new car costs you probably about $12,000 a year. Having a used car, I say 10 years old, still costs you about $7,000 a year. What we're talking about is a $90 pass per month and an additional $11 per month. So what we're talking about is about $1,200 a year so that you can still have all the access you can. I mean, I think we focus too much on this political battery back and forth between Raleigh. If we don't do what we need to do to keep this economy moving, Mike, you know, we're missing the whole point of why we're doing it.
And Susan, you wrote recently in South Charlotte Weekly that some constituents have written letters to you and others saying, just pass the plan as it is right now and amend it later. What's wrong with that?
Well, I think it's a lot harder to change something, in my view, than, I mean, you would have to get the General Assembly to agree to the change. Now, I think if we're talking about the General Assembly, I think we need to also focus on the fact that they're playing an outsized role in this, but they're contributing zero funding-wise. Now, when we look at the blue line and how the blue line was funded, it was 25% local, 25% state, and 50% federal. And now I think people should really understand that the state is kicking in nothing. They're kicking in nothing. And yet they have all of this power to say what we need to include in our plan. And they're also putting people in place on the new transit authority. So they have an outsized role in this, but yet they don't have any actual skin in the game.
Yeah, and the governor will get a person on the new transit commission, as will the Senate President Pro Tem and the Speaker of the House, which is odd to me since they have no skin in the game. David, you wanted to comment on that.
Well, I mean, you know, this skin in the game thing kind of throws me off. I mean, you know, what they're doing is giving us an opportunity to take control of our own destiny. I worked at NCDOT. I'm not going to make excuses for them, but they manage the second largest system in the country behind Texas. We don't have state county roads. We only have city. We only have state roads. And because of that, we can wait on the STIP. We can wait on all these other things that the commissioner may be there, may not be there, but what they're doing is giving us an opportunity to get in front of cost escalation. I mean, what you said earlier is that we were going to build a whole system with a half cent. 25 years later, it costs exponentially more. 10 years from now, it's going to cost even more. Or even if we wait the 3 years of commission saying that we go back and negotiate, it's going to cost more. How do we get in front of this so that we actually get a system on the ground to serve people is my concern, Mike.
Steve, do we have any polling, any other indication of how voters feel about the plan they'll be voting on beginning Thursday?
There's been no public polling released on this. The Business Alliance and the Yes for Mac crew have kind of talked and kind of on background that they feel very good with their polling where they are. They feel like they're going to win in the 60%. But no, there's been nothing released in terms of crosstabs and what you can look at. I think it's interesting to go back and look at the recent history on some of these referendums. You know, we talked about earlier, the original half cent was approved in 1998. A repeal effort was defeated in 2007. So that's very good news for the pro-tax side. But then you kind of look at more recent history and you go, there was a 2014 quarter cent effort to increase the sales tax. That failed by not for it wasn't for transportation. It was mostly for education and the arts. That failed with 61% 2019. That was the arts referendum. That failed. But then again, the flip side, you go back to 2023, voters in the county overwhelmingly approved new school bonds. That wasn't a sales tax increase, but it was going to mean higher taxes. So you can kind of look at the recent history and point to different results to bolster your side. Hard to make a lot of sense of it.
You've done, Steve, a lot of reporting on public transportation over the years. You've pointed to declining ridership, which is a reality following the pandemic, not just here but nationwide. You've noted that with the toll lanes, the new toll lanes, the relatively new toll lanes on I-77 north of the city, it is likely to be faster for commuters to use those lanes than it will be to take the Red Line commuter rail train that will become a reality with the passage of this referendum. But this plan isn't just about CATS or links or buses or rail. It's also about bringing money to local municipalities to spend as they see fit on roads and infrastructure for transportation. So talk about that.
Yeah, the bill, the PAVE Act, provides that in addition to the city of Charlotte, that the six Mecklenburg towns get a piece of the 40% of the road money. Now they have to spend it on roads, but it is several million dollars for each of the towns. It's a significant amount of money to supplement their budgets. They are all on board, very excited about this, except for the town of Matthews because, you know, Matthews lost the Silver Line light rail. But the other five municipalities are very thrilled with this, very on board. They feel like it's going to make a difference in their budgets.
And I want to point out that some of this money for these individual towns, including Charlotte, to use on their roads is money they're having to spend because the state is not paying the money it's supposed to pay to maintain the roads we already have. So some of that money will go to we're essentially being doubly taxed for one service. Shannon Binns, who runs Sustain Charlotte and who is a proponent of saying yes to the referendum, wrote an opinion piece for us here at WFAE. It's on our website at WFAE.org. And he reminded readers that, quote, every day 157 people move to the Charlotte region. That's 157 more cars on the roads, which isn't exactly accurate because some of those people are kids and will not be driving, and even some adults who will not be driving cars. But nonetheless, 157 people are moving here. But it does mean additional cars, and it does mean more families depending on a transportation system already stretched thin, David. So if people vote yes, how will that change? How quickly will that change? How will a transit rider or a person needing to get from point A to point B notice it?
Well, I mean, Steve kind of explained it earlier. The thing that happens right away is the Better Bus Plan. So that is buying more buses. That is hiring more people. I mean, you know, the microtransit is either buying vans themselves or contracting with other people to do it. So all of that happens pretty fast. I mean, I am not going to sit here and tell you, just as Steve said, the Red Line, the Silver Line, all those have to go through, you know, the process of the federal approvals and other things that need to make them happen. But I mean, I also want us to remember this is not about the next 5 years. This is about the next 30. This is about my grandchildren's children, making sure that we provided a community that as it grows, we can move around. You mentioned the state and being double taxed. I will say that the legislation did say that nothing changes about the projects that we get out of the STIP every year. What this does, it gives us an opportunity to accelerate in an urban area projects that take too long to get through the state. So we are not going to lose the money that we get from the state. That still lines up. They can't take it away. They can't replace it. Matter of fact, we can't replace the transportation money. We normally
except that my point was that they're not doing what they're supposed to be doing in terms of maintaining the roads. If you've driven on Charlotte's roads, you know that that is the case because they're terrible. The roads here are terrible, and that's because they're state-maintained and they're not being maintained. Susan, we've often been told that if we had the money, we couldn't build enough roads and we couldn't build them fast enough to effectively reduce future congestion and gridlock, and that if we don't act now, we will likely kill the goose that laid the golden egg. People are coming here because it's a great place to live, but if it's so congested you can't move, it's no longer a great place to live. So why does that not temper your admonition that we should vote no on this? This does something.
Sure, it does something. And, you know, everything is a judgment call, right? I mean, in my view, we're not getting enough to actually help. It's not the right medicine for our ailment. And so I don't think just taking medicine that doesn't cure the disease is what we need to do. And to me, it actually precludes us from doing what we need to do. So, you know, I just wanted to say also about what you were saying about the state roads, about the state money. The towns will use that state money, that money that they're getting, to help get their projects prioritized. So not only are we being, are they being double taxed, or we're all being double taxed, because of our 7.25% that we currently pay in sales tax, 4.75% of that goes to the state. And every single person in Mecklenburg County that pays property taxes needs to know that every year Mecklenburg County is paying $464 million to supplement the things that the state is not funding, such as education, such as our courts, such as mental health. We're this going to be adding transportation to that, in my view, with this.
We're talking about the 1% sales tax for transit referendum that will be on the ballot beginning on Thursday with early voting on Charlotte Talks on WFAE. You are not alone, Susan, in opposing this plan. Former Charlotte Mayor Jennifer Roberts, former City Councilman Braxton Winston, the Reverends William Barber and Ricky Woods, as well as community activist Robert Dawkins, all oppose the referendum, mainly because they say sales taxes are regressive, meaning they apply equally to everyone with no weighting against income levels, so that they will hit the poor the hardest. But won't lower income people also be those who benefit the most? They don't have the cars. They need the public transportation. This will improve public transportation. Doesn't it balance out?
Well, you know, in my view, this is a, you know, we don't see the ridership projections, right? We don't know. This is like at best a 2020 approach to our transportation needs. So is it really going to help that many people? We don't have the studies. We don't know, you know, based on post-pandemic workforce and the changes that AI is going to bring. We really need to evaluate this plan and make sure that it's actually future tested by experts. I feel like this plan, to me, is sort of a better than nothing, hurry up and do something plan.
I have 10 seconds, Susan. The original plan had a lot more rail in it. Rail's permanent. So if you're talking about technology changing, that wouldn't have changed over the years. Rail is there to stay.
Right. But at least it would move mass numbers of people. So,
we have to take a break. We'll come back with more in a moment. It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE.
Support comes from WFAE listeners and the Gambrill Center at Queens, presenting Earthwise, a public series exploring our connection to nature through science, film, art, literature, and lived stories, part of their Connected Campus program. More at gambrillcenter.org.
It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFAE.org. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about the 1% transit tax referendum that will be on the ballot beginning Thursday when early voting begins, with Steve Harrison, WFAE's politics reporter, who also spends a considerable amount of time covering transit and transportation options. Susan Rodriguez-McDowell is the District 6 representative on Charlotte's Mecklenburg County Commission. She's urging a no vote on this. David Howard, a volunteer for Yes for MEC, the organization campaigning for you to get to vote to yes, is obviously here to advocate that you vote yes for this. I mentioned, David, that some significant people have come out against this, including former Charlotte Mayor Jennifer Roberts, former City Councilman Braxton Winston, the Reverends William Barber and Ricky Woods, as well as community activist Robert Dawkins, because all sales taxes, not just this one, are regressive. They hit the poorest, the least who can afford it the hardest, because it's not adjusted for income. On the yes side, on the proponent side, some other significant figures, including Governor Josh Stein, former Mayor Harvey Gantt, former U.S. Transportation Secretary, and former Mayor Anthony Fox, including some Republicans on and off council and the Black Political Caucus. Why are they supporting this?
Because, you know, I was going to bring those names up. And let's go to the regressive thing real quick. I'll just make a quick statement about it. I think it's a regressive mindset to require people to need a car to get around a city too. If Charlotte's growing, and I told you the math earlier, if it costs anywhere between $7,000 to $10,000 a year to maintain a car, that is gas and maintenance, and if you have a payment, The difference is maybe $1,200 a year if you get a bus pass and ride it all day, every day for a year. That's what makes more sense. The regressive part is actually saying we're not going to provide you access to, you know, the jobs and to the healthcare and to the education, but we're going to almost make you have to have a car and spend even more money. So that's not leave the regressive part without that. But I think people like, you know, I served locally on city council, planning commission. You know, I even served in Washington with Anthony at Federal Highways and, of course, at the state. Both of us know that it's hard to get funding to do any of these things. So, I mean, you know, this idea that you actually kind of say no to an opportunity to control your own destiny is something that we saw cities across the country trying to make sure they could actually do themselves. This is a great opportunity for us to do that. And I think that's what all those people recognize. Steve mentioned the federal money we want to go after. You don't get to go after the money if you don't have the local match. So, I mean, we don't even get to be in the game if we don't have the funding to do the things that we're talking about doing.
So in the opinion piece you recently wrote, Susan, in South Charlotte Weekly, you say that the funding as laid out in this plan pushes the cost away from federal and state funding, which is how these things have been normally funded in the past, and onto the backs of people, 70% of which are living paycheck to paycheck, while at the same time, the GOP in Washington has passed this big, beautiful bill that continues tax breaks for corporations and the wealthy, while the GOP, these are your words, while the GOP-controlled legislature has a stated plan for getting the corporate tax rate to zero by 2030 and shifting more of the burden of roads onto us, the citizens, while massively underfunding NCDOT. That's what you wrote in Charlotte Weekly. Okay, right. But couldn't it be argued that this is what people want? People voted for our Republicans in Raleigh. People voted for the Trump administration. Isn't that what they want? And therefore, if that's what they want, say yes to this and move on.
I don't think that's what people voted for. I think people voted for lower costs. They thought it, you know, they thought they would get some sort of break on inflation, but what they've got is more inflation. And so I think the opposite of what people wanted is what they've actually gotten. So I think I appreciate you reading all those words that I still stand behind, that pushing the cost onto individual taxpayers is not the answer. For us to celebrate the idea that we get the opportunity to double our, tax ourselves, triple tax ourselves to get something done, to me is just so misguided. I can't understand why anyone would want to would agree to pushing costs down to paycheck to paycheck people while the corporate tax rate is literally going to zero.
So in your mind, which is the bigger reason to say no? The fact that this is regressive and it affects the poorest among us the hardest, or that it won't solve the problem the original plan was designed to solve? Which is the bigger bugaboo for you?
I feel like it's not a binary thing for me. It's both. It's both. For me, it really gives me heartburn, this whole funding thing, for sure. But the economic climate, to me, is just terrible, especially when you look at, you know, the big BS bill that's come through. When you look at the fact that you mentioned before that we've approved the bonds for schools. Now, I'm proud that we've done that, but that is going to has baked in property tax increases with that. So, you know, we have increases coming with healthcare. We have increases coming with utilities. We have increases coming with insurance for our homes and cars. So, you know, to add this sales tax on top of that with a plan that, in my view, doesn't actually solve our problems, you know, to me, it just I can't support it.
So proponents, David, of this see this as a driver of future economic growth. That was certainly true of the Blue Line. The Blue Line literally created South End and revitalized other areas, which raises the tax base. Will we see something similar with the addition of the Red Line to the northern towns, or the way the Silver Line is currently configured, partially by rail, partially by bus rapid transit out to Matthews?
Well, of course we will. And it's not just in Charlotte. If you look at fixed transit investments across the country, it's done the same thing. So I think that's coming. But probably more importantly is that the investment brings jobs. I think the stats that I've heard is that for every $1 billion spent in an economy, you get 50,000 jobs. I mean, you know, a lot of what ails this community, Mike, is making sure that people have access to jobs. They have access to health care. I think this whole double tax regressive is kind of regressive to not give people opportunities to get out and get around, to make sure that they can access all the opportunities that we're talking about. And in a lot of ways, this whole, you know, what's going on in Washington, we're talking about 3.5 more years. What we know is that every time something changes, we'll see probably 7 new administrations in the next 30 years. You don't plan for what's there. You plan for the way that you need to grow your community. You plan around the trends that have always been, and the federal government has traditionally participated. There's no reason not to think that. And I think anybody who wants to change Raleigh should go run for office. I mean, we need y'all to run in the general, for the General Assembly, because, I mean, what we have right now is what we have. So, I mean, you know, and this is what you work with. And if we get a better situation in the future, we'll go back and we'll do it again. But doing nothing and waiting for the perfect is not how you grow a city.
Steve, Matthews Mayor John Higdon has complained bitterly about the decision not to bring the Silver Line train into his town. Originally, it was to have gone from Belmont in Gaston County, past the airport, through uptown Charlotte, and out to Matthews. When the northern towns said they were not going to support this tax plan unless they got the red line, because they didn't get it the last time, everybody was a Twitter about this. It put the brakes on everything. Why isn't this opposition in Matthews having the same impact?
Because it was really Matthews versus the rest of the county. Everyone in the county, the other 5 towns, the county, the city of Charlotte, kind of banded together and said, look, this is the plan we've agreed on. This is what we are sticking to. And so there, Mayor Higdon back in 2024 made some efforts to try and get them to change the proposed funding split, to put a little more money for trains. Maybe it's a compromise with Raleigh, a little more money for roads, et cetera. He kept trying to kind of get them to open up and change a bit. But there was really solidarity among everyone else that, like, this is what we agreed to. We are not deviating from the plan.
David, Mayor Higdon says that bus rapid transit doesn't work anywhere in the country. Is he right or is he wrong?
No, he's not right. He's definitely wrong about the fact that it moves people. I mean, what he's talking about is the economic development benefits that come from fixed rail. I get that part. So, I mean, I don't think anybody involved is not intended to make sure that Silver Line goes beyond Bojangles and goes all the way out to Matthews. That's not on the table. I think anybody involved will tell you this is a long range play on making sure we have a regional plan. But back to the red line, Mike, the only reason the red line didn't get the wheels that it needed was because of the negotiations with North and Southern. I mean, I touched that one on the planning commission, the city council in Washington and Raleigh, and actually getting North and Southern to a point where we could use their right of way has taken this long. It wasn't necessarily just cost. So, and Steve is going to correct me on something. So, he won't let me finish. So, Steve, am I saying something different? I was at the table. So I'm telling you, it was negotiation.
I mean, yes. I mean, there was the city did not have the ability to build the red line for many, many years until, I guess it was 2023 when Norfolk Southern agreed to sell the tracks. But in a way, it was kind of a moot point because after the blue line extension was built and opened in 2018, Katz was out of money. You know, so you've got a situation today where the city of Charlotte owns the rail from uptown to, you know, the entire red line, and it can't be built because there's not enough money. There's not enough money today.
You're leaving out the recession. The recession had a lot to do with some of this too.
The Great Recession did drive down sales tax revenue significantly, but it roared back around mid-decade, you know, 10, 12, 14 years ago. The tax now generates the same amount of money it was projected to. So, I mean, I think the recession was 18 years ago. I think the key thing is just to remember is that the big plans from the 2007 referendum on transit weren't fulfilled. And a big reason, part of the reason is the recession, but part of the reason is that Katz overestimated how much its ability to pay for these things.
Susan, I know you want to get in on this, so go ahead.
Well, I just wanted to mention that, you know, you mentioned the BRT and Mayor Higdon talking about that not being a good solution. And there is no example. There's no plan. There's nothing about an actual BRT to Matthews, which would have a dedicated lane. Like that is what the gold standard of BRT is. You have to have a dedicated lane, and there's nothing about that in this. There's no, I've seen nothing about having a dedicated lane. So I think you're right that this is about economic development. It's about transit-oriented development, and it's about, and if you look at who is going to be on the MBTA, I think that's going to be really important that we make sure that things are equitably, investments are made equitably. And I'm concerned about how the Blue Line extension to the south is being more prioritized than extending the Silver Line further.
The MPTA, by the way, is the Metropolitan Transit Authority that will be created by saying yes to this referendum, which has members on it appointed by the City of Charlotte. I think City Council has 12 votes on that, who gets on, 12 members they can appoint. Each of the towns have one. The governor has one. The state senate has one. The state house has one. Charlotte City Partners have several. It's an odd makeup of people being appointed by various different bodies. Susan, this 40% for roads, which is mandated by the PAVE Act, which is what we're voting on, is actually one of your key objections. You have said that 40% for roads was never part of the plan until mandated by the state GOP and became key to getting something passed, with the notion that something is better than nothing. But it won't solve, you say, our transportation issues. So you say we'll be stuck in gridlock. Did we do a sufficient job of explaining to the legislature the realities of what we face in Charlotte, or would that have even been possible, since they seem to have deaf ears to the great state of Mecklenburg?
I think that is a great question. You know, I think, Mike, there has to be leadership that brings that story. And I have not been a part of that. I don't know if the mayor, I don't know if the city, because the county doesn't really do transportation. That's not our thing. So it's more of a city-focused thing. But I can't speak to whether or not anyone went on any kind of mission to try to change minds at the General Assembly. But I can say that, you know, when you're working with a legislature that is basically our way or the highway, I guess I didn't really mean for that pun to come out, but it did. I understand how difficult it would be. But in my view, we can't give up on that. There has to be people are changing in the legislature. Like we have a new speaker. Right. This, not new anymore, but he has been new since Tim Moore is the one who said you have to focus on roads. Phil Berger has a challenger. You know, things can change, and maybe we haven't done enough of a good job, but of diplomacy or whatever there. But when you think about Mecklenburg County is 21.7% of the entire GDP of the state of North Carolina, and yet we don't get to make our own decisions on what we need for our community. That's a problem.
It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE. One of the selling points, David, by the Vote Yes people has been that transportation is the largest source of climate pollution, and that expanding rail and bus and bike options will give residents alternatives to driving and reduce emissions and make our area a healthier place to live. But 40% of the money is going to roads, 20% to buses. Many of those buses are not electric. They are burning fossil fuels. Do you really think this will make a significant difference?
Every car you take off the road makes a difference, Dee. So, I mean, if you're riding on a bus, and buses are more and more becoming electric. I think Katz has a number of them on the road already, and that is the new technology. You're definitely going to help that. But beyond even the environment, don't forget again about, the people. I mean, the people that need it. You know, the Chatty study told us when we were 50 out of 50 that transportation has emerged as one of the main factors of helping people to get access to ways to improve their mobility in our community. And I mean, our upward social mobility. So, I mean, there's other benefits. There's economic benefits. There are a lot of benefits. I hear the music, so I was going to talk about the state, but I guess I can't. So.
If you can do it in 10 seconds, yes. But you can't.
It's a Republican state. Yep. We got what we got. Run. Okay. And we need help now.
David Howard is a volunteer for Vote for Yes for MEC, the organization asking you to vote yes on the transportation referendum. Susan Rodriguez McDowell, member of Mecklenburg County Commission, asking you to vote no. Steve Harrison is a reporter for WFAE News. Make up your own mind. Thank you for the hour.
Charlotte Talks is a production of 90.7 WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from Mazda of South Charlotte. Our executive producer is Gabe Altieri. The senior producer is Sarah D'Elia. The producer is Chris Jones. For more information on Charlotte Talks, to listen to past episodes, or to subscribe to the Charlotte Talks podcast, visit wfae.org/charlottetalks.
Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, focused on applying Mazda's customer-centric approach for vehicle design to car buying and servicing in order to create an experience centered around the customer. More at mazdaofsouthcharlotte.com.